as a memory that will cling to me if I live forever and a day. I will never forget how I and my loved one met and our romance came our way. I was an incubator baby, and she was the girl next door. I turned my head, smiled at her and said, "Darling, you're the one I've been waiting for." It was a case of love at first sight. The first kiss made my hopes soar. I've been happy and yet I always will regret that we hadn't met before. I was an incubator baby, and she was the girl next door.
Yay! You want to put him on speaker and bring him in? Ask him about Zero Mostel?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Comedy on Vinyl. This week, Zero Mostel sings songs my mother never sang. I had to buy this after we did the Grinch. I mean, I love Zero Mostel anyway. But I had to buy this after the Grinch album. And I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't get the chance to look as to whether or not it's the same composer, but it seems very much like it is the same composer, because it sounds exactly the same. It's from the same time period. Yeah. Zero Mostel.
But yeah. And then the Doogie Howser opening, where we can hear the clickety-clack of the keys as we verify the information we haven't already done.
I was hoping
on.
You would back me up and say,
I'm not backing anything up on. I was waiting for a nice clean opening.
Oh, nice clean opening
before I stuck my oar in.
Okay, but what's the first thing you ever saw Zero Mostel in? Let's just start that way.
The first thing I ever saw Zero Mostel in.
He's reading this off a script.
All the quests. Actually, everything you're hearing today is written off a script. Mm-hmm. No matter how ad-libbed it sounds, all the pauses, overlap of dialogue, awkward...
If you search for Zero Mostel Grinch on Google, we're the third result in pictures, so that's exciting, right?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, so we'll go down in the annals of Google history.
The first thing I saw Zero Mostel in would probably be... I'd love to say it was Fiddler on the Roof because I grew up in New York,
but
it wasn't. I don't think I ever got the chance to see that.
How far towards the end of his career was that, though?
When he was doing it on Broadway? I don't know. He was the one, I don't know, it wasn't at the end. He's the one who came up with the didle-deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle-dum.
He came up with that?
Yeah, he made that up.
What?
It was just supposed to be something else, and he forgot the lyrics.
That's amazing.
So he came up with that, and it was just so much better, and it just worked.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so that's, again, another one of those... I hate to say these things because I love working in film and television, but it's the difference between, like film and television stories and theater stories.
Yeah.
Because film and television people have anecdotes. And
yeah.
Theater people have stories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, come up with something that eventually became what Topol would do in the movie.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So many great.
But now that you say that sounds perfectly accurate.
Right. So I think the first thing that I actually saw him in was when I was about 11, 12 years old. My father sat me down and made me watch The Producers for the first time.
That's perfect.
And there's something I recognized about his voice. I had heard his voice on a couple of things, I think, before that. But I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After that, did you see Funny Thing happen on the way to?
Maybe Funny Thing happened on the way to the Forum was the first one.
Okay,
I think I remember sitting down with my father and him saying this is funny, and I didn't remember disagreeing within the first 10 to 15 minutes. Because a 10-year-old, my father's going, "Isn't that funny? It's a play on the whole Greek," and already lost me. I don't know. I don't like Greek food. That's all I knew. It's gross cheese and olives.
Yeah.
And some funny-smelling liquor.
Yeah.
So, no, I was not interested.
Were you a big drinker as a kid?
I was lushy.
Uzo?
Yeah.
No,
not much of a drinker.
No, okay.
Not even on the high holidays.
Is that how you have to say High Holidays?
Well, if you're going to Jew it up on the High Holidays, you have to, because there's always that wonderfully sweet wine that makes kids want to drink.
Mm-hmm. That's well, understandable.
Not really. It still tastes like crap. Even a kid knows that. Hey, sweet, shitty wine!
The first thing I
saw... Mazel tov! No, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. The first thing I saw him in was Du Barry Was a Lady. Have you ever seen that movie?
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. Very, yeah. Very much after the fact.
I watched... Really?
Yeah.
About 40, 50 years later?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, I think the first time I saw it was about 5, 6 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up watching it, which I don't know what that says about my family, because I've never met anybody else who's ever seen it besides you. So it kind of, I mean, but, which is weird, though, because it starred four of the biggest stars of their time. No, I lie. It's not, Lucille Ball wasn't anybody yet. This is her first big thing.
Yeah.
But Lucille Ball, Red Skelton, Sierra Mostel, and Gene Kelly. The idea that Red Skelton and Gene Kelly would be fighting for the same lady...
Why not?
I mean...
If Michael Jackson and
Paul McCartney
can fight for the same woman, I think my willing suspension of disbelief... Yeah. I can make believe, you know, what? Don Imus and a puppet, you know, are fighting over the same lady. You know, just pick any two random things,
that's true.
You know?
That is true.
The two lamps are fighting over the love of the light bulb, you know? It's like, well, one of them has to win.
Fuck, that's a Pixar movie. You should trademark that.
I think they already did that.
Yeah.
Plus the insertion of the light bulb
is
not going to be very Disney-friendly.
Yeah, no, that's true. But this, like, I was just thinking about it, looking back at Zero in that movie... And then later on, and again, what you just told me about Fiddler on the Roof. He was like one of those guys who, I don't know if I was an actor, one of his contemporaries, I don't know if I would have liked him. Because he feels like a guy who liked to eat scenery and chew it all up and like really just take the attention from everybody else.
Well, I don't think
know if that's true, but that's how it feels.
Well, it definitely does, because he was so good at it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
But that's what I think would make it okay. I don't think he would be just a Jonathan Winters, totally off the chain.
Right.
You know, like, you don't know what the hell's going to come out of his mouth.
Right.
Which is also awesome in its own way. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like, they're all awesome. You know, like, I don't mind somebody choose the scenery as long as they know that they're doing it, you know,
yeah.
When to do it. You know, he could jump over Gene Wilder and the producers.
Yeah.
And Gene Wilder doesn't, I mean, he doesn't have any of his stuff, his thunder stolen from him.
Right,
you know,
right.
If anything else, it's the, you know, it's the two of them being hysterical in their own way.
Oh, yeah.
That makes it work so well.
Yeah.
I
do feel like maybe, though, that maybe he had to have inspired some people who maybe took what he was doing the wrong way. You know, after Robin Williams hit the scene, it seems like a lot of people were like, oh, fuck. I can be as loud and obnoxious as I want and take up as much time.
Well, I think people were pushing it. You know, it's one of the great things about comedy and one of the reasons I love about, you know, talking about it or studying it. And by studying it, you know, it's not actually studying. It's just listening to things that I think are funny, which is also great.
You're allowed to call that stuff.
It is. That's what I tell the tax people, so I write it off at the end of the year.
Write off all those... CD.
I had to buy the Groucho file on Amazon, and I'm writing it off because it's now a learning aid.
Of course. Of course it is. Yeah.
And I'm not joking about that.
Yeah.
So, it's wonderful and funny that I should bring up the Groucho thing because I see a couple of songs on this one that Groucho did.
Really?
Yes, like Show Me a Rose and Father's Day, which I love, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think My Love is Waiting, although he might have sung that. I don't think so.
What do you think his goal was with this album other than to collect a check?
I
don't get it.
I think that's, you know, when you see things like this, you go, well, somebody thought this was a good idea, and it obviously wasn't.
Right.
On so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but the cover on this alone is just genius.
That's
and for
why
those
I bought
of you
it.
Who haven't seen it, you have to see it, because... If anybody's seen, like, a bad acting headshot from the 70s, where it's, here's what I look like. Here's me as the surly bartender, as the wacky ship's captain, as the mad doctor, as a billboard. You know, I mean, whatever the fourth thing is, he's got about, 12 12 character pictures in which he's sweating in almost all of them.
I don't think he could.
I mean, the main one, you can see, I mean, literally the cover of this looks damp.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's got them all. He's got, like, the a saluting guy wearing a striped barbershop quartet jacket.
Well done.
The dandy wearing a boater and a tiny cane. The lovelorn fools pricked his finger on a rose. The schmucky poet philosopher holding a book like a violin as he reads through his bifocals or his you know half spectacles. The stupid artist cradling the an hourglass. An outraged judge, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
A powdered wig.
Mm-hmm, that's what it looks like.
Yeah. An old. What is that? That's like the Dutch boy on the paint can.
It kind of is, but retarded.
And well, I mean, not even retarded. I just think like fright wig. You know, like
yeah.
If, you know, if he fell asleep for 30 years and woke up, he probably had long curly nails. Folk singer.
Yeah.
A ship's captain.
Mm-hmm.
A man with a beret. A man holding a tie.
Uh-huh.
And somebody trying on a sweater that's too small for them, and the hat is on top of the neck hole where the head should be.
Yeah.
Absolutely hysterical.
Yeah. Yep.
But
they don't make them like this anymore.
They don't make anything like this. But yes, I think the point of making this was is you see someone who's a comedic talent who's not a stand-up. You know, you get a stand-up and you cut an album.
Right.
This is, well, we have Zero Mostel, and he agreed to do something.
Yeah.
We have to give him things because he's not a writer.
Right.
He's just this lunatic.
Yeah.
So let's give him songs, which he might not sing particularly well, but he'll add a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Or let's give him this creepy children's story, i.e. Grinch Who Stole Christmas, and see what he does with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all you have.
Mm-hmm.
A tulip told a tale of a maid and a man who lived in a pea-green boat. He was the captain's daughter, and she was the boy next door. A tulip told a tale of a maid and a man who vowed they would never part. Father objected to the son-in-law on the grounds that he was a bust. The daughter said, Dad, he's a college grad, a lad whom you can trust. The captain yelled with lust, he's a bust. He's a bust.
You know, anything else, you know, it's like, what are you going to have him do? Read the Canterbury Tales?
Yes.
You know, it's like, no one's going to sit through that. I don't think he'd make it.
No, no, he wouldn't.
So.
The characterizations are very similar to the Grinch one, if we're going to compare
it
to anything.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, the man was a genius, but he did have, let's not say a limited vocabulary, but,
right.
You know, there are things he was paid to do.
Yeah, yeah. Your bag of tricks, if you will, as my only acting teacher once called
me. Right, it was an awesome bag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really well embroidered and held a lot of stuff.
It really
but,
did.
You know, I mean, he does what he does.
Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of. I love it, and I love it for many different reasons, but I don't know if I would have bought it. Like, I'm trying to compare who now.
Of course you would have bought it. I mean,
you
like,
think?
This is. The, I mean,
I don't
think
know.
Back. This was to a point where people actually. But now, again.
I'm setting the Wayback Machine, boys and girls, to a time before cassette tapes, because that's when it all started to change. But when there were still albums and people couldn't rapidly reproduce and give away music, you actually bought music
and would save up money to go buy music.
Right.
There wasn't a lot of other things to go buy, boys and girls.
Is this
movies
the thing,
were cheap. And,
is this my alternative to penny candy, though?
Right, yes. I mean, that was it. I mean, if you saw this on the shelf, you'd be like, yeah, I'm going to buy that.
Probably. I mean, yeah, I guess. At the time, I don't know who
I mean, there had to be
70s.
People like me and you to keep, you know, this fringe. I mean, that's why there was a classical section and a jazz section, because there were people who bought it. There weren't a lot, and that's why it was stuffed in the back and had a tank around it so that their music didn't blend with the popular stuff, you know, filtering throughout the tank. Because if you walked into a record store and heard... you would have turned around and walked the fuck
That's
out
true.
Again.
That is true.
You know?
If you'd have heard this, though.
Especially if it was me doing a bad imitation
right.
of a horn.
Can we do that as an album?
You can.
All right.
I can do my harmonica imitation.
Oh, do it. Please.
Let's do a comedy on vinyl tribute to Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
And I can do all the little Stevie stuff. All
right.
Because I did one once live on stage. It was awesome.
How was that?
It was fun. It was in college where you could get away with crap like that.
Right.
Because
yeah.
everybody is drunk or stoned or both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is before all the horrible drugs came out, you know, before you realized that prescription drugs were right there in your parents' house, and you could try them until somebody died, and then you back off a bit.
Sure.
It's a learning curve.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, but...
That's okay.
But Zero, and in all of these pictures, I'd like to point out, he has awesome comedy hair.
Yes.
Because Zero realized that a really horrible comb-over is quite possibly one of the funniest things you can ever see. It's that one.
Oh, this one. Holy
shit. And by that one, the one him cradling the hourglass.
From a distance, I thought he was wearing a hairnet, which is why I was so confused.
Right.
That is clearly the most creative comb-over on the planet.
Yeah, he's got it, I think, coming over and then forward, but he's got all the strands just glued down and defined so perfectly.
Yeah, I think he had absolutely no hair on top at this point. It was all long. Because he had something similar in The Producers, but at this point he was 10 years older.
Yeah.
Already. Give you a little perspective, kids. I think this was 1977. It doesn't say it on the album, but I saw it online as 1977.
That sounds good to me.
All right, 1977 it is. 2 years. No, same year, pardon me, is Star Wars. So if you had to choose between this and Star Wars,
I would have gotten Star Wars. Okay. Well, actually, the proof's in the pudding, because I actually have the album of Star Wars.
Which, what does it look like?
The one that has the fold that folds out, and it's just all the music.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think I also have one of those Star Wars ones. And, Jason, he's not leaving. He's just rubbing his legs together, and he's wearing jeans. That's what you're listening to. But I think the most, and as much as I love talking about Zero Mostel, the comedian and, like, the actor and the performer as genius as he was in pretty much everything he was ever in. There you go, the story of Star Wars. Yeah, you got it right here. Yeah, no, I have the soundtrack. That's what it is.
Okay.
Star Wars. Very different, and I would have taken Star Wars 10 times out of 10 over Zero Mostel.
Sure.
But, yeah, I think the most interesting thing, and the one thing that it always came back to, and as much as I love talking about how talented Zero was, is The Blacklist.
Yeah.
And it was one of the things that whenever, you know, I saw when my dad showed me a funny thing happened on the way to the forum, or The Producers, I believe after Rhinoceros, that was another one with him and Gene Wilder, which they did the stage version of, and then did a movie version of, and I would have loved to have seen Zero turn into that rhinoceros on stage. Because I heard, because Bill Ratner, who did a wonderful one-man show at the Fringe Festival in Hollywood this past summer, talked about how he was influenced as an artist. Bill Ratner was, aside from doing many of the voiceovers you've heard in everything, I'll just geek out for 1 second to appeal to the nerd audience. He is the voice of Flint on G.I. Joe.
Awesome. All right?
The original Flint on G.I. Joe.
Cobras coming up over that ridge. Let's fire lasers randomly around them.
That was him. He talks about seeing him do that live on Broadway, I believe.
That's awesome.
And just it changed his life. You know, just ripping off his clothes, and he had great, you know, makeup on, you know, all of his body, and he turned into a rhinoceros. I mean, this live on Broadway on stage.
Yeah.
Would have died to have seen that. You know, on film, it's fun.
Yeah.
But
it
doesn't have that immediacy or the danger of watching somebody do it like really in front of you, and then now he's running with the rhinoceroses and then the rhinoceri, and then, you know, just incredible. But
that's awesome.
But yeah, so aside from that, you know, and the man he's vaudeville, he's stage, and you can see it in everything that he does. You know, he's just one of those people who's amazingly adept at taking something very big and realizing that if you insert those moments of stillness, you can make it work for screen, either television or film. But yeah, the Blacklist, and that was the thing that my father always wanted to talk about, as terrible as it was, as wonderful, brilliant as he was, the most horrible thing is that we should have gotten a lot more of his work.
Right, right.
And here is this brilliant man being, you know, an artist being taken down by the government.
Yeah.
Which...
Very.
which, as much as I hate to say right now, you know, it's like you can almost see us going back to that again.
For sure. For sure.
And, you know, so I think, you know, I just take a real serious tack here in this one, but, mm-hmm. you know, as a harbinger of things to come, please, please, please remember Zero Mostel.
Yeah.
And as much as we, you know, love to remember some artists who have won awards, you know, Academy Awards, Lifetime Achievement Awards, whatever it is, who gave up names and things like that, people who remain nameless.
We're alive. Sorry.
You know, it's the people like Zero who are the true heroes. And, you know, anybody who's worthy of accolades is somebody who can maintain, you know, a comedic outlook and be such a brilliant performer after going through and realizing just how miserable human beings can be to one another, especially the ones who want to do nothing more than entertain and share something that they're good at, especially something that is literally only there for the benefit of mankind.
Yeah.
To either question or to celebrate or to divert for, you know, for 2 seconds, something away from something so terrible. You know, like, that's why, as much as I might not like Tyler Perry movies or Adam Sandler movies right now, you know, to give people something that they love to go to and laugh at for even an hour and a half or 80 minutes or 2 hours, whatever it is.
You can't discount that part.
It's amazing, especially nowadays when people are so full of fear and uncertainty about what the world is. It's just, I think it's just so great, you know, and...
And there's still enough cynical art that you need to balance it. You need to balance it with stuff like that.
Well, because cynical is easy.
Yeah.
You know, and God bless the person, and I never say God bless ever, which is a weird again. So let's just go big up.
Big up.
Let's use an outdated Rastafarian term from the late 80s. To anybody who can make a fart joke in the, or a shit joke, or a dick joke, or whatever it is, in the face of horrible, constrictive, or whatever it is, you know, in the face of, you know, our modern sensibility now, if you think, you know, liberals are too liberal, or conservatives are too conservative to be funny, or to understand, to poke fun at yourself, whatever side you're on. To have somebody who can stand up there and do it, and in that sense, I can actually see somebody equating Adam Sandler or Tyler Perry to Charlie Chaplin.
Right.
Because they do want to kick the ass of the establishment a little bit. I mean, yes, they are it, but it's nice to see it, even if, you know,
they're lower level. They're the establishment within the anti-establishment.
Yeah,
so it's,
and as much as I don't like it or like it, I still love what they do.
I
love it. I love it. I love anybody who tries to make anybody laugh. It's
right.
great, especially if they don't do it well. And then I laugh even harder.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, thank God it's not me up there. That was one of my favorite stories. I think it was on The Moth, and I forgot who told it, but it was Colin Quinn. I think it was Colin Quinn.
Uh-huh.
Talked about somebody asked him to do a tribute or a roast at Robert De Niro's birthday, like down at his restaurant in Tribeca, some crazy ass crap.
Right.
And he wasn't. You know, he doesn't think of himself as anybody particularly special or famous or anything else.
Yeah.
He's like, why would he ask me to do this? So he goes up, and he didn't really know, and he was so flustered with it all, and was on a short time frame, or he had other stuff to do, and he goes up there, and poor guy, you gotta hear him tell it. It's absolutely just heartbreaking, just wonderful storytelling, too.
Mm-hmm.
Is that he's doing this, and it's half, you know, insult, but he's also kissing his ass at the same time, so it's just really uncomfortable is what it is. And De Niro keeps looking at him, like, with that sour, like, who the fuck are you kind of look on his face, like, and why are you here, like, who invited you? But who knows? I mean, he could have been the one who said it, just that he has that face. And all he can hear is the one person laughing in the back of the room, Robin Williams. And apparently whoever he was with was like, go up there and help him. He's like, absolutely not! Are you kidding me? There's no way I'm going up there to help him. One, I'm enjoying this far too much. Because it's not me. And two, you know, like, what the hell am I going to do? You know, it's like, I'm going to toss a rock to a drowning man? I'm not helping.
God.
No, just let him do with it and he'll, you know, then I'll be it.
Oh my.
It's a great story.
That's horrible.
Again, if you, and not to plug something else, but if you are a fan of stories, you know, out there, The Moth is pretty great. And Bill Ratner, who I was talking about earlier, has won a whole bunch of times on the Story Slams. I hope to go one day and do something. I don't know. Make something up. Although you're not allowed to do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
It has to be real. Otherwise, what's
legit.
The point?
That's
no, it's
got
to be a real story.
I like that.
Today, father is Father's Day, And I'm giving you a tie. It's not much I know, it's just my way of showing you I think you're a regular guy. You say that it was nice of me to bother, but it really was a pleasure to do. Ere that I was born, I did not have a father. That's why I'm so proud of you.
I have got a couple of good ones I'd like to tell. One about getting shot in front of my parents.
Really?
In high school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, by a plastic gun.
Okay.
It's really dramatic,
fine.
Though. It's very funny.
That's awesome.
And the other one is the last time I brought marijuana overseas, which is when I was in college.
Uh-huh.
And I got hit by a minivan and then decided to smoke pot on the airplane. Which, for all you boys and girls out there, I mean, this was before 9/11.
Uh-huh.
You don't know. Don't,
no,
don't, no, 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 no.
That's not an
don't,
option.
Don't even think about anything even, like, and the story is relatively funny, but don't you dare out there, boys and girls. And I mean, boys and girls of all ages at this one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they have that thing which looks through your clothes now.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is creepy.
Yeah, we're creepy.
Yeah. Disgusting.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
I don't mind personally because no. I think I'm being bombarded with so much radiation and things anyway. Like,
that's
what's
true.
It matter?
That is true.
But yeah. But anyway, yeah. To go get back to the serious stuff is Zero being blacklisted. And
yeah.
It's just, you know, the particulars of it are just it's again heartbreaking to see somebody who is taken out of their natural element because
yeah.
somebody somewhere says they might have seen them going into a meeting or putting themselves down on
right.
a list to talk about an idea.
Yeah. Well, that's just the thing, is that the arts are such an easy fucking target for anything like that, for any kind of a witch hunt, because of what it is, which
right.
is the expression of ideas and thoughts that might not be comfortable for most people.
Right, and I mean, all you have to, and the funny thing is, you know, all of this came out of trying to protect ourselves from communism. Meanwhile,
yeah.
you look at, you know, Russia, you know, well, they had the most oppressive artistic, you know, it
yeah.
was literally, it's you couldn't write anything.
Right.
If you didn't get it approved by the state, so, you know, you had only the things that were able to talk about certain things in a way that
mm-hmm.
you know, the higher-ups could. And they had, like, 6 or 7 rounds of censors who
yeah.
would go, well, is there a way to look at it from this way?
Right.
No. Sorry, I'll do my evil Russian voice. Well, is there a way to look at it from this way? No, нет. Конечно.
That was good. You get a lot of work doing the Russian voice?
No, not lately. It would be better, more, but I'll take what I can get. But, yeah.
I was just looking up actually details about the blacklist as far as
Zero
concerned. Jesus Christ, for 8 years.
Yeah,
he wasn't on screen for 8 years.
8 years, and I mean, he really didn't work for 10 because
uh-huh.
the beginning of that was, I mean, that's what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean, my father always rounded it up to 10 years, I think, because it was more depressing. But yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous, you know, and think about that nowadays. If you were to be taken out of the curve or taken out of the loop for 8 years, you come back, people wouldn't know who the hell you were.
Holy shit. Okay, I want to read a little something off of Wikipedia. And yeah. I, again, to keep this in mind,
yeah,
this is off of Wikipedia.
Bing! Wikipedia. Take it with a grain of salt, boys and girls, because anybody can change it. Zero Mostel was blacklisted for 10 years. Also fought Gamera in a bloody battle in the Pacific Ocean. Yeah, go ahead.
It does say that, son
yeah.
of a bitch.
Who won?
Zero, actually.
Of course.
He's just the power.
He's manic.
This one person recalls the proceedings thusly. It began with the committee's counsel immediately launching his attack. Mr. Mostel, are you or are you not a communist? Zero leaped out of his chair behind the counsel's table, knocking the microphones to the floor, and reached for the throat of the HUAC attorney while shouting, "That man called me a communist! Get him out of here! He asked me if I'm a communist! Get him out of here!" The committee was roaring with laughter. They were delighted. Here they had Zero Mostel all to themselves, on stage, in a private dining room. Zero went on playing and parlaying with them for at least 20 minutes, responding to their questions by reciting each amendment in the Bill of Rights. Finally, the HUAC lawyers cautiously said, Mr. Mostel, we know all about those amendments. We simply want to know, are you or are you not claiming the Fifth Amendment? He didn't ask Zero, are you not a communist? He asked him, are you or are you not claiming the Fifth Amendment? What they wanted him to say was yes. After another 10 minutes of sparring, Zero said, yes, I'm claiming the Fifth Amendment. So then they stopped it, and, but yeah.
But it didn't help.
No,
that's the thing, is you were damned if you did, and you were damned if you didn't. It was all up to some amorphous thing, which you might have gotten a pass, you might not have. Mm-hmm. And no one knew what the deal was.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it really took, if you've ever seen the movie The Front, ladies and gentlemen, again, to play Comedy Professor and branch out, I believe it's Woody Allen, and he didn't write it, but he plays the fake writer that a bunch of blacklisted writers in Hollywood went through to get their stuff published, and basically he was the one that told them all that it was the question that was offensive.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the answer. It's the question. It's how dare you ask. It's like, what's the authority of this group to ask me this?
Yeah.
And that was really what it came down to. It's not whether or not I'm a communist. It's who gave you the right to ask me that?
Yeah.
And I don't acknowledge, and whoever gave you the authority, I don't acknowledge them.
Yeah. Yeah. The balls. The sheer balls that it took. On both ends. The shitty balls on the part of McCarthy.
I don't know the name of the writer, but it's killing me.
But the balls on the part of the artists who would challenge that is amazing. I don't know if you'd find it in the same way now.
I think you would.
More?
I don't think more. I think it's the same.
Yeah.
I think the ones that you would expect to cave to save what meager empire, whatever else there were, and there would be some surprises on that list.
For sure.
But I think most of the ones you think that would turn around and say, you know what? Fuck you. Fuck you to whether or not, is this a gay movie? Is this a racist movie? Is this a violent movie? Is this... Or whatever it is.
Yeah.
A TV show, a play, a sketch of internet video, whatever it is. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I think it's exactly the people you'd think to be the ones to say, it's whatever you think it is.
Yeah.
You know what? It is for kids. I know it's me naked dancing for 20 minutes, but it is for children if children learn something from it.
Yeah.
It is whatever
you
think it is.
For sure.
I don't have to label it. Even though I have to click on something on YouTube for whatever category, that doesn't mean that's all it is.
What I want to know is, where's the video of you dancing naked for children?
I'm wearing a puppet head. You can't really...
Okay, is it jeremyguskin.com or is that...
No.
No.
No, no, no.
Okay.
Yeah. Look up Munchie Chi Head with Genitals. Look that up.
I will. Hold on. I've got
actually,
my phone.
Or Giant Munchie Chi Head with Genitals.
With Genitals, yeah. Otherwise, it's going to be a little confusing. The things you're going to find.
Or Giant Munchie Chi Head Genitals Jiggling. I think that one's there
is that,
also.
That's the top result,
I think that's somebody taping it and reposting.
Oh, right off the screen.
But you don't really have any power over
that. Right, now. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, I did it. I know what I did, but, you know.
Sure.
That's a different video.
Of course.
That's if you want to see that one, that's Giant Munchie Chi Head Seeks Revenge. Watch that one.
Okay.
And if you
like want
to see a guy, a naked man in a Munchie Chi head, beat somebody to death with a golf bag.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, YouTube took that down because the Munchie Chi is a trademark thing, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, if you blur that out, it'll be fine.
Oh, that's sad.
Draw a mustache on it, maybe.
Oh, yeah, what if I do that?
Say it's a Groucho head.
Look, okay, so take that one. Look for Munchie Chi head in blackface revenge. Look up that one.
We're really off topic, but that's because I don't know if this is an album that you can go to.
I think we were talking about censorship, and
I think
that's very on topic.
It's on topic for Zero Mustel.
I'm going to make two questions, because I don't really know a lot of these songs well, but there are two that I know. I know Fight On for Tannenbaum, which is pretty good.
Uh-huh.
But the two that I know very well are Show Me a Rose, which I love, and Father's Day, which I think is hysterical. And I send to my father every year Groucho's version.
Uh-huh.
I really should send him Zero's version next year. So don't listen, Dad, because you won't know what
you're
getting.
Paul Guskin, not listen.
And Show Me a Rose is very funny. But Father's Day is...
Do you send him a tie with it?
No.
No.
That would be great. But
it would be good.
Don't.
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say about that. Zero Mustel sings Harry Ruby's Songs My Mother Never Sang. And track one is I Was an Incubator Baby.
Okay, I will admit, that's a hell of a way to start off.
It's really the best.
Yeah.
It's the best first thing to put up there. It's wonderful.
It's the best tune of them all, also.
Yeah, and all the other titles could be Gershwin songs. You wouldn't know.
Right.
But you know...
You get to it.
You know the Ira didn't come up with I Was an Incubator Baby, which is awesome.
There's so much passion behind everything that, like, that's kind of what carries it.
Oh, he's
this enthusiasm.
So
and again, like I said, no cynicism whatsoever. It's just, this is funny because I'm being an ass, you know? And I value that. I value that considerably.
I always thought Zero was one of those people who was... He's the true essence of an entertainer. He was an actor, but he was an entertainer. You know, he could sing, he could dance, he could do everything.
Something really bothered me once. I was actually, we talked about my first acting, she was technically my second acting teacher earlier. We had to bring in samples of our favorite acting. People brought in fucking... You can guess. Probably there's probably Pacino in there, De Niro. Somebody brought in Christopher Walken. She got to slam that down. I brought in the producers with Niro, the whole Niro bit. And, like, it was interesting to listen to people. People loved Gene Wilder, but even she wasn't really into Zero Mostel.
Really?
And that really upset, because he's quote-unquote over the top. But in context, sure, I didn't show him the full movie, you know? In context, it's perfect. And I still think, I don't know, to me it still holds up. That kind of, over the top seems like a kind of a cop-out.
Well, I mean, you know? I think it's easy to say comedic performance is over the top, because that's kind of what it has to be. It has to be larger than life.
Yeah, right.
But he does it so well, and he never plays anything that doesn't seem like it's within the world.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, even when he's being gross with the old ladies and the producers, you know, he's just like, that's what he's got to do.
I hate to see a fellow use a bad verb or make an adjective out of an adverb. But purists will forgive me generously if I abuse and use a word like thusly. Hold me thusly, without regard to syntax, dear. We have naught to fear, for we're in love. Kiss me muchly, my promise, dear, right here I give. Splitting an infinitive won't get you in Dutchly. Be yourselfly.
But I mean, there are plenty of parts where I get chills or get a genuine emotional feeling from what he does, and that is that not the point?
Yeah.
You know?
Not to poo-poo your teacher's...
No, it's fine. It's
sensibility,
fine.
But I mean, I think he's a brilliant actor, you know? I mean, he's able to convey so many things, and he switches from one thing to the next so well.
Yeah.
You know, he can do manic to sweet.
Right.
Within
a
half a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's Michael Jordan in an Indian.
Yes.
You know, that type of, you know, Michael Jordan almost seemed to get faster when he cut the other way. You know, same thing with Zero Mostel. You know, I mean, he would get almost more realistic the crazier he got.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It bothers me to hear that. I mean, we now sort of think that we're more sophisticated, so that every generation of actors thinks that we've improved on the art somehow.
To be honest with you, I don't think American acting has really improved in the last 40 to 50 years.
Right.
You know, we're pretty much doing what we saw people do before us, and
we're
just, you know, doing it a little bit more or trying something a little bit less or whatever it is. You know, we haven't dumped everything to go to a totally over-the-top style, and because we sort of have this deluge of things that are instantly available to us, you can have something that's, you know, campy and over the top, followed by something that's over the top and dramatic, you know, with, you know, overscored and severe lighting, and over the top comedic, and, you know, you get a little bit of everything.
Right.
You know, even the fringe stuff is mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, a nerdy show like The Big Bang Theory that people actually watch. It's like, really? People understand these comments?
Right.
All right.
I wonder if they do.
They do.
Yeah.
People love that show.
I mean, it's got
some great writing in it.
I can't watch it.
Oh, it's very good.
They're stereotypes. They're boring. For me, it's a stereotype I don't want to watch.
Right. Well, I'm surrounded by MIT people all day, so, you know, what's the point? Now, where do they go? They're like the California Institute of Technology.
I don't know.
I think they all do a lovely job on this program.
That's so. What he's saying is, what's the name of who's your agent?
Oh, Geddes. Okay. Ann Geddes. Yes. Oh, Ann Geddes. Yes.
That's great. So that get him a job on the show.
Yeah, like they need more nerdy types on that one.
Maybe they need an Indian.
I think they've already got a real one.
Yeah, but
he's one of the main ones.
Right. Maybe they. Yeah.
I'll do the Russian accent.
Okay. Good.
Russian physicist. What do you do? Hit with stick. What do you do with plutonium? You jam in there. Push with finger. Then wipe off on lead.
They could bring... First of all, Yakov Smirnov needs a resurgence. You could be his son.
That would be awesome. I could play... Or just his lab assistant.
Right. That would be very good. I'm getting a call from my sister.
It's my pacemaker.
Oh. Why is my sister calling your pacemaker?
Oh, I thought that's what my... My bell was buzzing. Sorry.
Yeah.
My fault.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what the time, like, what our time frame
We're at 35 minutes, everybody.
No, that's fantastic.
So, in case you were already, you know, keeping track of time and waiting until this would be over. I don't know. There's not a lot to say specifically about this album, but I feel like we've talked about him all.
The songs are very funny, you know, and mm-hmm. he does them very well. But again, it's not his material.
Right.
He didn't write any of them. So it's really just him singing them. And again, it's great. You know, mm-hmm. I could talk about Groucho singing one of those songs for about as long as this.
For sure.
It's funny, and they're very cute. Yeah. And they're for old people.
Definitely.
Yes.
Definitely. I recommend this record label's still around. I feel like something like this could, if they put a digital version out of this, people might buy it. Why not?
I mean,
I feel like there are weird things like anything, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was thinking about this the other day as I was looking at this. I'm like, wait, Vanguard, I should look them up. I looked them up. They still exist. They still do comedy.
Yeah.
And it feels like a thing that, just to let, it's out there. Why not let somebody pay maybe 50 cents for an MP3 of it?
Did you go on their website? Do they have any downloads or things like that?
They do, but just not of their back catalog. You know?
Well, then,
out of
right. Stuff. Where's the back catalog, asses?
And that's what I'm thinking about doing. Yeah. I thought about saying...
And not to say the people at Vanguard are asses.
No,
it's just
no,
that
no.
we like this old stuff.
Exactly.
And, I mean, it's got to be sitting there somewhere. Just put it, you know, put it in your laptop and burn to die to yes, and then, you know, you sell it to us.
And you know what? Here's an argument for listening to something like this. It cost me... This one cost me more than the other ones. This cost me $6. But you go to some places, you're going to get an LP for $2.
Yep.
And a lot of these I buy for $1.50, $2. It's worth the money unless you're absolutely poor, which I get because I've been there. But you should just listen to things that look interesting to you. If it sucks, make a podcast about it and complain. If you like it, you know, tell people, which is what I'm doing. I just happen to do that in a podcast. I want to explore. So we found a couple things we like. You found a present for your dad. You're going to send your dad a song.
Yeah, well, it's the same song I send him every year.
Doesn't
just
matter,
somebody new singing
it. Much more.
Thing, which would be
nice. I was an incubator baby. You should send him that one, too.
I don't think he's going to like it.
No, I really, that kind of makes me happy. And that's the point, isn't it, Jeremy?
Yes.
At the end of the day?
And that's where we get back to the entertainment thing.
Yeah.
Making people happy.
Do you have anything you'd like to plug? You were just on General Hospital.
I was just on General Hospital. Would I like to plug? No, I'd like to plug nothing. I have nothing. It's been sparse lately, ladies and gentlemen, which is fine.
Do you want to reverse plug the things you've done? You did Uncle Jeremy's Smile Hour
here
at the
Fringe
Festival?
Yes, I did a show that might be coming back to the Hollywood area, Uncle Jeremy's Smile Hour. It's a 45-minute romp.
It was hilarious.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I mean, I saw it on previews.
Yes. We got better as we went on. But episode one was Hello. And episode two, I believe, will be Shapes.
Nice.
Yes.
I'm frightened already.
So it should be fun. We'll have some reoccurring guests and some new ones.
I actually was reminded of it quite a bit when I saw the Tony Clifton show last night. Very similar goals.
Nice. Tony Clifton. There it is.
I got to see. It was a good 3.5 hours of N-bombs and J-bombs.
Sweet.
Yep. F-bomb. Every word that you can imagine. It was amazing.
A lot of bombs.
It was brilliant. It was wonderful. It was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life.
Nice. And I'm sorry, but I missed, and I've been dying to see, but it sold out instantly, was this old murder house from Austin, Texas, doing Jurassic Park Live.
That would be so
good. Which I heard was just absolutely freaking incredible. They even added a late night show, which I unfortunately couldn't go to because I had to teach at 7:30 in the morning and had a voiceover audition for something pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, good copy this time. But yeah, so Jurassic Park Live... this old murder house. I'm sorry I missed you guys.
You guys are listening to Regrets Plugs. Things
yeah,
we didn't get to see.
It's,
we really wish we had.
We wish we had seen that.
But do go watch the Tony Clifton show if you're here in LA, because it's going to be here for several more weeks.
Mm.
So... and it's funny. And there are benefits. It actually has there's a charity.
And you won't hear this in time, but a drinking game.
Yes, a drinking game tonight.
Tonight.
Yes.
And it's Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So if you're hearing this, you're already too late.
Yep.
So buy your tickets for the next one,
yep.
Which I believe will be, this sounds like a Mr. Show sketch right
yes,
now.
Yes, it does.
Our next one, which will be Blazing Saddles, yep. Won't it? Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah,
I have no idea who's playing who I'll play.
We don't know. Yeah. No, me too, although I gave up.
I want to do the treasure. I want to do Gold Hat on Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Really?
Yeah, badges. We don't need those thinking badges, which I thought that was originally written for Blazing Saddles until I saw Treasure of the Sierra Madre,
right.
And I freaked out. I was like, oh my god, Mel Brooks is even smarter than I thought he was.
Well, there's probably a lot of people who thought you can go to UHF and make the same thing, because they make the same joke in UHF. So there's probably a lot of people who saw UHF thought it was from there first.
Yeah.
Saw Blazing Saddles, thought it was from there. And then maybe saw Treasure of the Sierra Madre. So that's twice removed from the original joke.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good stuff.
It is good. Well, everybody, listen to comedy. Listen to Zero Mostel. Yeah, honestly, though, if you've never seen Zero Mostel, because he's not going to get a lot of exposure in your little world, probably, watch The Producers.
Oh, absolutely.
If you can find DuBarry Was a Lady, it's worth it. He's a small part in it, though. He does a very good Maurice Chevalier, however. It's very good. It's dead on. And there will be clips of this in the episode, which you've already heard, so why I'm telling you that, I don't know. But there's always a link on the fucking website to buy these albums. Oh, I dropped an F-bomb.
Yeah, it's all right. We've done a couple.
I'm sorry. It's inappropriate.
They've been sparse, I'd say, and only for effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the foothills of Nebraska, 6,000 or 7,000 miles from Alaska, there's a college gaining fame by the name of Tannenbaum. When the football season is here, the students get together and cheer. Fight on for Tannenbaum. Be there in the spot to give all you've got for Tannenbaum. On the campus, in the classroom, fight, fight, and do it with all of your might. Right! Be there to do your share, regardless if you resign through a Guam. Give your might for and fight for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, Tannenbaum.
Yeah, go and yeah. If you have to see a Mostel, I'd say Producers is just fantastic.
Yeah.
Funny thing happened on the way to the forum is not bad. And if you can actually find
Phil Silvers is in that too.
Yeah, if you can find the video version of Rhinoceros, it's not bad. I mean, definitely worth seeing. I can't think of the top of my head.
City Slickers, Josh Mostel.
Yeah, no, not necessary. I mean, good for him.
Sure.
But not
and
zero.
And David Paymer.
Not zero.
Can we get Paymer on this
David
show?
David Paymer would be awesome. I have a slew of questions to ask him.
Do you have anybody who knows David Paymer? David Paymer, if you're out there, we'd really like you to come on the show because you're fun.
Yeah. I'll just ask questions about Mr. Saturday Night, if that's okay.
All right, that's worth it.
I can keep it to one. Give me one thing.
Yeah.
I'll keep it to one.
Just talk about that.
I could do it.
Could we talk about how his brother should have been in the Three Stooges? The other Paymer, who looks a lot like Larry.
Oh, yeah, he does look a lot
like and he does a very good impression.
You're right.
He did that impression on Mad About You once.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Larry? That's hard to do.
Yeah, he nailed
it. You know who is Larry, and I found this out only after the fact? He's like Ren and Stimpy?
What?
Do you remember Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah.
Stimpy.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's Larry.
You're right.
And I mean, it's dead on.
Red.
Yeah, you're right.
When you hear it, it's dead on. It's freaky how he hears it.
That's pretty good.
It's
Billy
weird.
West is a genius. Yeah, Billy West, if you're out there, come on the show, too.
Yeah, come on the show. We'll ask you only questions about that and Futurama and anything else we can dig up between then and there.
And Phil Hartman.
And Phil Hartman.
I will bend his ear. Oh, by the way, congratulations to Phil
and
Hartman.
And congratulations to Phil Hartman on the Canadian Walk of Fame.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. So, yes, that happens this year. And then they're going to start working on the Hollywood one.
And he'll get it eventually.
Yeah, he will. Well, apparently there's just a shitload of people that are already behind it, and they can get the money.
And, of course, you know, if the situation wants one, Phil Hartman has to wait.
Yep, of course.
There will be a star that says the situation on it.
I will.
Just so you people understand that. And there'll be a TV above it, or possibly a microphone, which will be even more frightening.
Yeah.
Here, how's that for a harbinger of things to come, ladies and gentlemen? Huh? A guy could put on the turban and got the crystal ball out, right? I can tell you what Hollywood will look like in the future. It's pretty much the same, just a lot more depressing.
Can we have a separate one, like a reality walk of fame?
No. They have the
Skid Row.
TCM does their silent movie, the classic film festival every year. Uh-huh. And I got to tell you, it brings out the best of old Hollywood. It's wonderful.
Yeah. All right, that's worth it.
Another plug, ladies and gentlemen, for something that I'm in no way connected with.
Turner Classic Movies.
Turner Classic Movies. Your tickets for that are too damn expensive. I teach at the High School for the Arts and do so in the film department from time to time there. Give us some free tickets. Can I please take these kids to see some real films? So when I ask them what the greatest classic movie is they've ever seen, they don't give me things like the second Indiana Jones movie.
Christ.
All right?
At least they're trying and reaching a little bit.
But
good God,
it's nightmarish.
And they must beg you constantly, when are we going to get to meet Nick Clooney? Like, they must ask you that all the time.
Constantly.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
Is he still... George Clooney's dad.
No, I'm kidding.
All right. Just saying, he's not a big guy. No, Rosemary Clooney's the one. But
yes,
she's
there's
not,
the one you want.
But she wasn't on TCM, unless you count White Christmas.
No, I count that.
All right, it's a great movie.
Rosemary, I count.
Yeah, I love Rosemary Clooney.
Absolutely.
Yep, so, Rosemary Clooney, if you're listening.
So, with a podcast that starts with Zero Must All, we end with Rosemary Clooney, and their boys and girls is the grand circle of entertainment.
Thank you for listening. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at jklamm, J-K-L-A-M-M. That's too complicated.
Jeremy Guskin. And I don't really write anything on Twitter, so if you'd like to follow me, that's fine, but I don't really recommend
it. He's on Facebook.
Facebook, I'm a little more entertaining. I
can't
do it.
He's got a like page up there, right?
I subscribe to, like, Albert Brooks and Gary Shanley. I don't know how they do it. It's constant. And it almost gets to the point where it's annoying.
Yeah.
They're all funny. Don't
get
me wrong.
Sure,
but I'm, like, inundated with it. It's why I like The Onion. It should come out once... It's like it comes out once a week. Mm-hmm. That's why I like getting the paper. I don't look at the updates online.
Right.
Just get the paper. So once a week, it's, look at that. And then there's that thing. And then I'm done. And then I can wait until the next Thursday. I mean, I love Albert Brooks. I mean, we were just talking about his comedy. Mm-hmm. With another wonderful voiceover person. Paul Eiding. Mm-hmm. But they're both brilliant, but it's just I can't, you know, like when if you want to tweet, you can't keep up with those people.
No, absolutely not. There's
unfair.
No point. Honestly, there's no point in following either of us on Twitter.
I mean, if I had enough money where I could sit around and just tweet for a while,
for sure, like
whatever
Steve
I'm
Martin,
looking at, it'd be fantastic.
Steve Martin published his tweets, you know. I saw it the other day in the store.
He has a book that's just his tweets.
Yes.
So you see, there it is.
They're good, though. To be fair,
sure. So,
they're really good.
So are Albert Brooks's, so are Gary Shandling's. They're all, I mean, Louis C.K., all those guys, they do some great
To be
things.
Fair, if you've been writing for 40 years, one hopes you can do it in 140 characters and just blow everybody else out of the water. But it gives you hope.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's like our equivalent of, you know, haiku.
It is. Wow. We've gone a lot of places today, Jeremy.
Yeah, we're all over the map.
But thank you guys for listening, and have a good thing.
I knew the moment that I met her that it was forevermore. Now I look back and see why my life used to be so empty for me before. I was an incubator baby, and she was the girl next door.
Comedy on Vinyl is recorded at Fort Awesome Studios in beautiful downtown Burbank, California. Our producer is Mike Warden, our host is Jason Klamm, and he's also the editor. Comedy on Vinyl is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. You can check out all of our other podcasts, books, videos, other audio stuff, probably some writing, at stolendress.com. And please check out Comedy on Vinyl at facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, twitter.com/comedyonvinyl. And please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us highly, and spread the word. Thank you so much for listening to Comedy on Vinyl this week, and have a very good thing.